Well, you've caught us now in the middle of a series on money, stewardship, finances, where we're looking at three little words that can turn your financial house upside down, three words that can dump you in a pit and leave you struggling for years, if not your entire married life or your entire life on this earth. What are the three words that we're looking at? What's the first one? More. Second one? Mine. And now today? MasterCard. Thank you, Eric. MasterCard. Today we want to look at the word MasterCard, and it's such a big deal in our culture, and I didn't want to just look at it. I could have stood up here one Sunday and just given you all the horrific data and statistics about how indebted everyone is. The reason I've split this into two, I want to give you help how to get out. So to give you help how to get out, I really needed two messages to do that. So we're going to look at it this week and next Sunday, the word MasterCard. See, the temptation here in America is so great. And by MasterCard, I simply mean debt, or I simply mean buying things on credit when you really didn't have the money to buy it. That's all I mean. Buying things on credit when you really didn't have the money to buy it. But the temptation here in America is so great because there's so much we see that we want. There's so much that we're exposed to that we want. And if you're not careful, shopping and things can actually start to define you. There's a scene from a movie, Confessions of a Shopaholic, that shows what I'm talking about. I want you to look at it with me.
Pat, why don't you share your story? Hello, everybody. I'm Rebecca Bloomwood.
Hi, Rebecca.
Welcome.
I just actually came here as a favor to a friend. I like shopping. Is there anything so wrong with that? I mean, stores are put there to enjoy. The experience is enjoyable. Well, more than enjoyable. It's beautiful. The sheen of silk draped across a mannequin. Oh, the smell of new Italian leather shoes.
Italian leather shoes, that's the best.
Oh, the rush you feel when you swipe your card. And it's approved. And it all belongs to you.
Okay, Rebecca. Thank you for sharing.
The joy you feel when you've bought something and it's just you and the shopping.
You and shopping.
All you have to do is hand over a little card.
Joyce, pull it together.
Isn't that the best feeling in the world?
Yeah.
Don't you just want to shout it from the mountaintop?
That's real.
You feel so confident and alive.
And happy.
And happy.
Warm. What's going on here?
I need to buy a new bag. I have to impress Alette Naylor.
You should get a watch to go with that bag.
Oh, there's a sale at Catherine Malandrino. Oh,
you're like my soul sister.
I know it.
I have to go. Good luck, everybody.
Do they have a shoe there?
Come on, Nakai. You sit down.
I'm really strong.
My wallet is closed. I do not want to shop.
You can see how well that's working. That was supposed to be a recovery group to stop the addiction to shopping. People need more. We got to go after the heart. Even Christians, we've got to go after the heart. What's going on in the heart is what's driving so much of the indebtedness and the abuse of credit. Believe it or not, folks, people have not always lived this way. People have not always, and it wasn't that long ago. It was not that long ago. Talk to your parents, or if definitely your grandparents, and if people didn't have money to buy something, you saved your money until you did. Wow, imagine that. You saved your money until you did. That's how people. But this past year, 5.4 billion credit cards offers were mailed to us, U.S. households. 5.4 billion credit card offers. At the end of 2006, there were nearly 1.5 billion credit cards stuffed into our wallets and purses here in America. That's America alone. A stack of those credit cards would be more than 70 miles high, the equivalent of 13 Mount Everests stacked on top of each other. At the end of last year, the credit card debt here in America at the end of 2008 reached $972.7 billion. Credit card debt. But let's start by answering a question that can be a little controversial among Christians. Is debt always wrong? In every case, no exceptions. Is debt always wrong? Does the Bible teach that it's a sin to be in debt? Should you always pay cash, and should you never borrow for anything? Did we sin or blow it as a church when we put a large chunk of cash down and then borrowed some money to build this first building. Did lots of families here in our church, including myself, did we sin by borrowing from our 401ks or 403bs or home equities to give a significant gift to help us get into this land and into this facility to do ministry? Did we sin? Was that wrong? Well, let me give you what I think is a biblical view of debt. Some people say that the Bible teaches that all debt is wrong. It's a sin no matter what. And they base that on the warnings of Proverbs, and there's lots of warnings in Proverbs about borrowing, about the relationship of the lender and the borrower. And they also base it on Romans 13:8. There's a verse in Romans chapter 13, verse 8 that says, "Owe no one anything. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law." Here's the problem with using Romans 13:8 that way. If you look at the context, if you check out the entire context of Romans chapter 13, what was said before, what he goes on to say after, you'll see that it's not about borrowing or lending. He's not trying to give a biblical principle about borrowing or lending. It's all about love, taxes, and respect, not your personal use of money in borrowing and lending. And when you look at Proverbs, you will see in the book of Proverbs that there are all these verses. It's filled with warnings about debt, making sure that you understand the position that you're putting yourself in whenever you borrow. That's it. Make sure you understand the position you're putting yourself in when you borrow, that the way the Bible describes it is slave. The slave, the borrower is always slave to the lender. It's a relationship that he wants you to know. This is the deal. If you do that, this is the deal. Proverbs 22:7 is one example. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. It doesn't say that borrowing is a sin. It doesn't say do not ever borrow. It just says that whenever you borrow, you make yourself, some versions say slave, some say servant, you make yourself a slave or servant to the lender. And I don't know about you, but I don't want a whole lot of that going on in my life. I don't want to have a number of relationships and situations where I'm slave to a lender. And you get a whole bunch of those going on with house, with car, with some other thing that you've done, with school debts. And after a while, you're strapped. Every time you borrow, the relationship is servant to the lender. Think about it. Thinking through, is it always wrong without any exception? Even the Good Samaritan folks used credit. He didn't have a credit card, but he used credit in his ministry to the man who'd been beat up and left to die on the side of the road. As he left that situation, went to the innkeeper. He gave the innkeeper 2 denarii. And then he said to him in Luke chapter 10, verse 35, "Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I'll repay you." Credit. So make sure you understand, this is, I think, a biblical summary of the issue of debt. Debt is not unwise when the item you borrowed money to purchase is worth more than you owe on it or could rent it for, or when it enables you to do ministry. With that being the case, in most cases, and again, there are exceptions, in most cases, a home mortgage, home property, business loans, or borrowing to invest in God's kingdom is not necessarily unwise. But depending on your circumstances, it can be if you get overextended. Even as a church, when we pitched it to our church family, and many of you weren't even here back then, but as we pitched it to our church family, hey, consider borrowing from your 401k, consider borrowing from your 403b, considering taking a home equity loan. That's what I did. I mean, I could have saved. When was I going to come up with $20,000? But from my home equity loan, boom. And here's what God did in his goodness and his mercy. The day I went to refinance that, it was 3 months later that I found a new rate at a different bank. I refinanced my entire home loan so much lower than what I had before. I got a 4.62 fixed after I took that $20,000 to give to the building. So much lower that my payments were only $30 more a month than they had been before I gave the $20,000. Now, that's the kind of stuff that God will do. Now, it's going to take me about 6 to 8 years longer to pay off my house. I was on track. It would almost have been paid off by now because I've been since we were newly married, I've been firing in extra to the principal to get it paid off. But by God's grace, all things being equal, who knows what could happen, it should still be paid off now in about 7 years. But it would have been done. But folks, I was able to give $20,000 to help us get into a facility to do ministry and begin to reach people for Christ. I don't regret that. I don't think that was a sin. And as elders, we sat down with people and we asked them to disclose to us their financial situation before we accepted a gift from them, because we didn't want someone to do something stupid. So if someone had just been moved emotionally and was about to borrow money from their 401k or some situation, we said, that isn't wise, we would tell them. So it's not always a sin. Borrowing is not always a sin. But it needs to be carefully considered, and you need to make sure that you understand the relationship you're putting yourself in as servant to the lender. But what if you're here and you're already in trouble? Or you're here and you're saying, I've seen what's happened to my parents, I've seen what's happened to my friends, I just see what's happening in America, I don't want to get in trouble. That's what I really want to address here this morning. So that's my second point. How can you get out and stay out of debt? How can you live financially free? How can you get out and stay out of debt? How can you live financially free? Financial planner Dave Ramsey says this: if you keep doing the same things, you will keep getting the same results. You are where you are right now financially as the sum total of the decisions you've made to this point. If you like where you are, keep it up. You are where you are right now financially as the sum total of the decisions you've made to this point. Now, some of you might not like that, and you may be fussing in your seat thinking, yeah, but things happened to me that I couldn't control, or I lost this or that. Granted, but it's still, how did you respond to that? What did you do? What choices you made? So much, we need to take ownership, folks, for what you can control. You've made decisions. I've made decisions that brought you to this point. Don't spend the rest of your days blame shifting, saying, but. Take ownership and say, I need a change. In other words, you're probably going to have to make some changes. And I know change is hard for all of us. But listen, the way some of you are living is hard. Really hard. And some of you are not even getting God's favor and blessing in the midst of the hardness, because you've not even yet tapped into grace giving that starts with a 10% tithe right off the top. You're not even doing that. So your situation, yes, is very, very hard and likely to stay hard. So this morning, I want you to listen to the wisest man who ever lived, who also happens to be the wealthiest man who ever lived. That's a pretty good combo. I would want to perk up and listen to somebody like that. Wisest man and wealthiest man who ever lived, and it's not me, it's not Dave Ramsey. Who is it? Solomon. Let's listen to Solomon for these next two Sundays. When this guy talks about money, you and I should listen. We should sit up. We should take note when this guy talks about money. And the book of Proverbs is filled with verses about money, riches, wealth. And when you read through it, here's what I see. You could summarize what Solomon says about riches, money, wealth as five foundations for financial freedom. Solomon, I think, gives us five foundations for financial freedom. If you take a net and just sift all the way through Proverbs, dragging the money net to see what does he say, because Proverbs are kind of random and they're scattered, but if you collect them all together in a basket and shake them out, I think they fall into five categories that I want to call five foundations for financial freedom. We're going to look at the first two today and the next three next week. Number one, keep good records. Keep good records. Proverbs 27, 23, and 24 says, be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds, for riches are not forever. Yeah, buddy. Riches are not forever. Attend to your herds. Know the state of your flocks. See, in those days, don't check out on this and say, well, great, I don't have any flocks. Give me another verse, Brad. In those days, everybody was a shepherd, so their assets were tied up in cows, sheep, camels, goats, donkeys. So he's saying, you need to know your assets. That was their main asset. Just put it into modern language for today. Know your assets. You need to know your assets. You've got to know where your money's going, and that means you've got to keep good records. It's a basic principle of accounting. The starting point is being aware. Being aware. The starting point is being aware. See, some of you are living financially in the dark. You're like a bat hanging upside down regarding your finances. You have no idea, not a clue, what is going on. Where it's going, when it's coming, how it's going. That's got to change. That right there needs to change. Listen, are you the kind of person that's always going around saying, I just don't know where my money goes. I just don't know where it goes. I just don't know where it goes. Stop saying that out loud. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. If you don't know where it goes, that's your fault. Find out. Find out where it goes. No one else is going to do that for you. We'll just listen to you say, I just don't know where it goes. You can figure that out. Figure it out. Find out. Keep a log. Start writing it down. Find out where it is going. See, that's the trouble, because people say money talks. Money doesn't talk. It just sneaks off real quietly. It doesn't talk. It doesn't say, goodbye. You just did that for the fifth time and you really shouldn't have. It gives us no warning. It just sneaks off real quietly. And people are saying, I just don't know where it goes. Yes, money's real sneaky. You got to track it. You got to keep a record. Proverbs 23:23 says, buy the truth and do not sell it. The old King James says, buy the truth and sell it not. In other words, get the facts at all costs. Get the facts. You got to start there, because watch out. If you don't know where you're going with your money or where your money's going, listen, if you don't know where you're going with your money or where your money is going, ignorance plus easy credit equals disaster. That's the land we live in. Ignorant. Now, it's changing a little bit because of the mess we're in now, but that's how we got where we are. People will loan you more money. If you get nothing else out of this, get this. People will loan you more money than you should borrow. Young couples, when you sit there in that bank and that mortgage lender says to you, oh, we've pre-qualified you for whatever they say next, it's a lie. Whatever they say next, reduce it drastically. You should not be sitting in a banker's office with no idea what your finances are like and what you should borrow, and you're taking the figure they give you. You should have already crunched numbers and know. Aha, they're not figuring on a tithe. They're not figuring on anything like that. They don't know what else is going on in your life. You should go in there knowing, here's what we can borrow. Here's the most we would want to borrow. We're going to put this much down on the house. We're going to borrow this much because here's what our payments would be. And we don't want our payments to be any higher than that. Don't sit there and let them tell you what you could borrow, because it's always more than you should borrow. And then you say, oh my goodness, but we were pre-qualified for such and such and such, and now you're in this big mess. You should know what you can borrow, and it will always be less than what they say. So you better know where it's going, and to do that, you're going to have to write things down. You're going to have to keep good records. You're going to have to get the facts. So you need to go on a fact-finding mission. You need to put on your safari hat. You need to go on a fact-finding mission with your money. And when you go on this fact-finding mission, you need to be looking for four things. And if you're here and you're young, please don't check out and think, this has nothing to do with me now. Make a note of all this. Save these notes. And start doing this as soon as you are in a position that you have money to do it with. Oh, don't wait. Listen today. Here's what you need to know. You need to know what you own. You need to know what you owe. You need to know what you earn. And you need to know where it goes. It kind of rhymes, so I hope that could stick with you. You need to know what you own. You need to know what you owe. You need to know what you earn. And you need to know where it goes. Say it with me. You need to know what you own. You need to know what you owe. You need to know what you earn. You need to know where it goes. Those four things should drive your fact-finding mission. And you could just make four columns and come up with the data. What do I own? What do I owe? What do I earn? Where does it go? And remember, see, because get this, nothing wrecks an opinion or an assumption like a number. You can sit around and assume, well, stop. Get a number. Nothing wrecks an opinion or an assumption like a number. When you start getting the facts down on, and here's what's so freeing about this. If you're thinking, sounds like a lot of work. Here's the deal. When you get the facts on paper, most decisions about what you need to do jump out at you. Some of you are just wrestling with financial decisions. You know why it's so hard? You don't have the facts. And so it's just all driven by emotion. And I don't know. Get the facts, and most decisions that you need to make will jump out at you. The reason some of you struggle is you don't have all the facts. So write it down. Keep a log. Make a record. Some of you are sitting there saying, I don't have time for this, Brad. I don't have time to write stuff down. I don't have time to keep receipts. I don't have time to actually check the Visa bill and go through there. Okay. You like the way things are going so far? Keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. But I'll say this to you. How much time do you spend worrying about your money, fighting over money, fretting over money, running from the phone when creditors call, saying, I'm not here. Tell them I'm not here. Tell them I'm not here. Dreading opening the mail. How much time do you spend on all that? How much time do you spend losing sleep over your money, tossing and turning with your mind spinning? If you were to take all that time right there and put it towards keeping good records, you'd have a lot less to worry about and you'd sleep a lot better. You do have time. So there's principle number one, keep good records. We're talking about what does Solomon say as a way to be financially free. Foundation number one, keep good records. Number two, plan your spending. Don't let it just happen. Plan your spending. Don't let it just happen. In other words, stop and think about where you're going and what you're doing with your money, for crying out loud. Don't just spend. Here's the deal so often. Don't just spend because you just got paid. I just got paid. Don't just spend because you just got paid. You need to sit down with pen and paper and set some financial goals and stick to it. You have to know where you're going. Don't just go through life and through another year flying by the financial seat of your pants. Some of you have been flying by the financial seat of your pants for so long. That's what got you in the mess that you're in. And you keep blaming it on, I don't make enough. I don't make enough. I don't make enough. Got news for you. You could make more and you would just be in a bigger mess. Flying by the seat of your financial pants, you'll just always be in chaos and turmoil and a mess. More money isn't going to fix that. And don't tell me, here's the other thing, I don't even have enough money to set any financial goals, Brad. Don't talk to me about setting financial goals. You got to have, you know, quite a bit of money to set some goals. If you keep saying that and you keep doing that, you never will. I know I'm speaking fairly directly. This is so unlike me, but I want to help you. I really want to help you this morning. Let me say, for 3 years, I made $11,500. For 3 years, I made $11,500 while I was in college and no one was paying for it. Mommy, daddy, granddaddy, nobody had left me a trust fund. Right here. Trying to pay for college, had a wife, had two little kids, and I had a budget. You say, budget what? Yeah, I had a budget. Just because you don't have much is not a reason to not have any goals or plan. I had a budget, and we still saved $50 a month for emergencies. Out of that $11,500 a year, still saved $50 a month for emergencies. So when the car blew a tire or the car tore up, it wasn't a catastrophe and a disaster. Saved. But that means that was $50 a month we couldn't spend. Saved $50 a month, and we tithed. So we gave $1,150 of the $11,500 to the church we were attending and gave extra to the building fund. Because I tell you what, on that $11,500, I wanted God's blessing. I wanted to see what God could do. I wanted to see God multiply the fish and the loaves, and he did. There's other ways that God can help you make it besides just hard cash in your little hand. Not getting sick. Not having to go to the doctor, not paying $70 for an antibiotic, not having the car break down as often as it might have, having your shoes last and last and last and last and last, even though you bought them at Pick and Pay. You know, God can do those kind of things when you honor him first, right off the top. Woo! I wanted him to have first fruits right off the top because I wanted him to see that it doesn't matter that it's only $11,500. I want him to know it all comes from you. And God, I desperately need to see how you're going to stretch this and make this last. Having little is not the time to not give. As God sees you give, he'll increase what you have. Some of you are sitting there saying, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I don't have enough. And God will leave you with your little fist clenched around your not enough. When he sees that you live open-handedly and that you acknowledge him in all your ways, including in giving, God will bless you. God will provide for you. God will take care of you in ways that you could not have imagined. And see, here's the other thing. You say, well, how did you do it, Brad? How did we make it? We had an old car, no car payment. We lived in a trailer, and I'm not talking double wide with a high ceiling that looks like a house. Trailer, that looked like a trailer. It was a trailer, you know. You bump into the wall and things just fall off. Trailer. Didn't eat out at all. And I'm not exaggerating, like, not much. At all. Zero. Zero. Dave Ramsey, I heard him on the radio the other day. He said, if you're unemployed right now, the only reason you should be walking into a restaurant is because you work there. Folks, you don't have to eat out. It's kind of like, it's almost like in America, it's like it's a given. I must eat out. No, you don't have to eat out. We made tubs of rice and took a breast of chicken and tore it apart in little pieces and sprinkled it in there and divided it. No one got their own breast, ever. And to this day, it kind of makes us sick when we have too much meat. It's just beans and rice and a little bit of chicken. You can do it. You can do it. But we didn't go to the movies. We didn't go to theme parks. We didn't do anything. And on purpose, we had no credit cards so that it would force us to live on what we actually had. We went through those years and did not rack up any credit card debt because we had no credit cards. And if we'd had one, it might have been a temptation to use it. We prayed and we budgeted and we made plans for what we did have. With everything else, and see, it takes time, it takes some effort, it takes some work. With everything else I had going on, I was full-time in school, I was working at the church, I would spend a little bit of time every weekend working on the budget, sitting down and balancing the checkbook, going through the receipts, keeping everything straight. We're talking old-fashioned way with paper and pencil. I just had sheets, paper. I didn't have a computer back then. This was like one sheet said food. This is real complicated. One said clothing. One said utilities. One said medical. One said car repairs. And I got paid, and I took these things, and I put them in different categories, and we lived. And we accumulated no debt. And folks, we didn't have a lush lifestyle, but folks, we could breathe. We had freedom. We had joy. We had peace. You could sleep at night. We didn't have the worries and the fret and the strain in our relationship of money stuff. Proverbs 21:5 says, good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. Putting what you don't have the money to buy on a credit card is what I would call a hasty shortcut. Putting what you don't have the money to buy on a credit card is what I would call a hasty shortcut. And making the minimum monthly payments on that credit card is what I would call a recipe for disaster. Now, don't hear me as a sin, saying it's a sin to use a credit card. I have one credit card, Elite Rewards MasterCard, and I put everything I can on that puppy because I want the points. But I pay it off at the end of every month. I pay it off at the end of every month. So they're losing money on me. It's a no annual fee, and when the points accumulate, I take those points and I cash them in for $100 BP gas cards. So just did that last month. I got $400 of free BP gas cashing in my points from my credit card. And then we use that for vacation. When we take long trips and we're sucking up gas like nobody's business, then we use those cards instead of thinking, oh man, that's going to kill the gas budget. Proverbs 21:5 in the Message says, careful planning puts you ahead in the long run. Hurry and scurry puts you further behind. So you need to understand this. Financial freedom is not determined by how much you make. Some of you keep thinking, if I just made more, if I just had what the salary they had, if I just had that kind of income. Financial freedom is not determined by how much you make. Financial freedom is determined by how much you spend. There it is. Spend less than you make. That would be my book. Inside would just be blank. Outside the title would just say, spend less than you make. That would fix so many things. It's not determined by how much you make. It's determined by how much you spend. Vicki and I were financially free making $11,500 a year. We were financially free because we spent less than we made. There are people, surely you know this, and make sure you understand it when you drive through neighborhoods to drop your kid off at somebody else's house or you have an occasion to be in some of these neighborhoods with big houses. Don't be jealous, folks. Don't be envious. Don't get all worked up. Those people, so many of them are strapped, strapped. And you'll see them, young couples out on the end of the driveway with little bitty kids, and you think, they're my age. Look at the house. Look at the cars. Folks, you have no idea the grief, the mess that maybe they're in. Don't be jealous. Now, don't hear me saying every single person in those situations, they're all in trouble. But in America, tons of them are. They're in trouble. Don't be jealous. So many people with great big salaries are not financially free because they still spend more than they make. Some of the most financially strapped and enslaved people are people with great incomes. But they're financially strapped and enslaved because they keep spending more than they make. And it's not hard to do here in America. If you're chasing the more monster and you're still thinking ownership instead of stewardship, and you're still holding on to almost everything you have, saying, mine, mine, mine. So make a plan. If you need outside help here, get it. Get outside help if you need it. Make yourself accountable to someone and say, help me. I don't want to keep living this way. But let me tell you some of what you need to expect. If you're in a mess and you say, I don't want to keep living this way. I don't want to keep getting the same results. I'm going to have to change. And you reach out and you ask someone to hold you accountable and you ask for real help. You're going to have to change. And here's what you need to expect. It's going to take time. You didn't get in this mess overnight. It's going to take time. It will be painful. And it almost always involves a downshift in lifestyle. If you're not interested in any of that, don't bother asking for help. It's going to take time, it will be painful, and it almost always involves a downshift in lifestyle. But folks, get ready for an increase in joy, peace, freedom, purpose, a sense of getting in on what God is doing, to actually have margin in your life and think, I'd like to give and I can give. And there's a need and I can meet it. And I know I'm honoring God. I know I have God's favor and blessing on me now as I lie down at night. I know I'm living the way God has called me to live. I know I'm responding back, being a giver, a grace sacrificial giver, just like he gave me his son. Whoo! Folks, it's worth it. It is worth it, worth it, worth it. And many of you sitting here, you know what I'm talking about. Some of you have been through it. You've done it. You've done it. You can breathe again. Now I want you to look at Proverbs 21:5 again. And I want you to notice a specific phrase in that verse that keeps so many people from getting and staying financially free. Here's one of the pitfalls in America. Maybe you're getting excited and you're saying, all right, I'll try to keep records. All right, I want to plan my spending. Let me go ahead and tell you what's going to happen. Let me give you one of the biggest pitfalls here in America. Proverbs 21:5 says, plan carefully and you will have plenty. If you act too quickly, you will never have enough. What's Solomon talking about? The phrase I want you to notice is act too quickly. What is Solomon talking about? Impulse spending. Impulse spending. Folks, have you ever noticed how when you go to the mall and you're walking through the mall, or even Home Depot, I'll go there because something broke. I'm trying to fix the toilet. I got to replace that little thing inside so things will flush and it'll stop running. But on my way to the toilet section, I see things I didn't even know existed that I want. Oh, that's cool. That would be so neat. Oh, look at this. It's amazing. Just not knowing helps. You don't even know. But here's the real kicker. When you see the big orange sign and it says half off, clearance, reduced, sale. Now that could be a good deal, but listen, I think we get in trouble sometimes. Just because it says sale, half off, clearance, reduced, doesn't mean you need it. Oh, it's quiet now. You're saying, but Brad, it's such a deal. Look, and then don't walk out of the store talking about how much you saved. You have less than you did when you walked in that store. You have not saved. You have spent. Now, if it was a need and you truly were going to get that anyway, you have saved. But so often it wasn't something we were about to get anyway, but there's this feeling, it's half off. And then, here's the real kicker, you're thinking about it and someone else goes over and touches it. You're like, I'm getting it. I was just thinking, but now she's handling that boot. And I'm going to get it before she gets it. I'm going to get that doodad before he gets it. It's half off and there's just a table there. Watch out. Every commercial and most salespeople are geared to get you to do impulse buying. I remember one night at our house, it was years ago now, and I've never regretted not doing it, but I almost did it. Oh. And it had something to do with water purification in our home so that our pipes wouldn't rust and the dishwasher would last longer and the washer would last longer. Everything that ran on water was going to last longer because this thing was going to purify everything. It was like $4,500 or $5,000, something mind-blowing to me, like what I pay for my used cars. And so I'm standing there, I'm struggling. He's in our home, he's done his presentation. Of course, I wanted to talk to Vicky alone. He wants to know right now. So we keep running into Lauren's bedroom, huddling up, and we come back. I can tell he's very aggravated by that alone, that we were talking without him. Oh no. We keep coming back, but there was some incredible deal that if we would do it that night, it was like a lifetime supply of detergent for the, it was something, you know, that's supposed to make you think, we got to do this now. And I came so close and then said, no, much to his grief. And he was very, very unhappy about it. Oh my goodness, never have I regretted that, ever. And I'm saying you're wrong if you bought it and you own it right now. I'm glad your dishwasher's running better and everything. But it's like, I felt so good afterwards. Don't let people, yes, you should sleep on it. Take a night to sleep on it. Walk away and think. Walk away from the dealership. Walk away from whatever it is and sleep on it and get counsel. Ask somebody else. And I keep saying this in this series, and I hope you're sensing this now. One of the tickets to the way out of the mess is a pencil and paper. Pencil and paper. Crunch some numbers. Go home and crunch some numbers. Crunch numbers. Sleep on it. Talk to others. Get good counsel. Pray about it. And then make a decision. Don't get sucked into the impulse buying of sale, half off. And here's what kills me. So often when I'm looking, because I try to find shirts and stuff. Now, I do put on my calendar when Dillard's changes seasons, when they're going from summer to winter. Little tip for some of you. That is the time to buy. They're getting rid of all their short sleeve shirts because they're getting in winter. And I actually have a guy in Dillard's that calls me. We got a little deal. He said, I'll call you. I said, great. Terry. And he calls me and says, Brad, this next week we're doing, because I don't want it until it's 70% off. 70% off. The shirt was $45. Now it's going to be, I don't know, $9? The last time I did this, I bought 8 shirts that'll last me years now. You don't have to go and pay what that original sticker price was. No way, no way, no way. No way. But sometimes what they do, I think they do it, is even in those sale things, I'm not convinced that that ever was the original price. Did you ever consider that? That they could put here in orange 50% off, and now it's this, and put on there, it was $79.99. For all we know, it never was $79.99. So don't go for that thinking, it was $79.99. They put that on there. They could lie. I don't know, but there's that outside possibility that that's going on. So don't buy into the myth that says, if I buy it now, if I don't, and here's the other thing, we've got this feeling inside, if I don't buy it now, it's going to cost me more later. I call that claustrophobia. This fear that if I don't buy it now, it's going to cost me more later. Got to get it now. Got to do it right now. You know, the whole one day only, 24 hour, call before midnight, blah, 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 blah. Do it now and also get the John the Baptist shower curtain, you know, whatever. They just throw in all these add-ons, you know, and the steak knives. It's anything to get you to move now, 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 now. And in the face of claustrophobia, God's word says in Proverbs 21:20, stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it. And you thought I was direct. Ouch. Wow. It's kind of in your face. Stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it. How about that? In other words, this is God's IQ test, folks. In a sense, he says money is an IQ test, not how much you have. So don't sit here thinking I'm saying you're stupid if you don't have a lot. His IQ test that he says is stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it. There could be someone with great income, and God says they're stupid because they spend it as fast as they get it. You can even find support groups today for shopaholics, like the one that was shown in that movie clip. Because compulsive spending now, American psychologists have put it in the category of an addiction. Just like alcoholism, gambling, and drugs, it's an addiction. Folks, it's not an addiction. It's a heart problem. It starts with the heart. People are trying to find satisfaction, meaning, purpose, image, reason for living in stuff, and it's never enough. You have to shop. All the excitement in that movie clip was, I feel happy, I feel warm, ha, ha, ha. You just have to do it all over again because there's this huge letdown as soon as you bag it and head home. You got to do it all over again because it doesn't satisfy. So how do you break this habit of impulse spending? Put the credit cards on ice. Put the credit cards on ice or heat your oven to 450 and spread them out on a cookie sheet that you don't want to ever use again and slide those puppies in there. Get rid of the credit cards. Now, that's if you're in trouble. I admitted that I'm using one. I'm trying to use it wisely and to my benefit. But if you're in trouble here, folks, just don't make it so easy to spend. Get rid of the credit cards. Cut them up, melt them, ice them, whatever you got, and start paying cash. And see, it forces you to feel the impact of what you're doing so much more when you actually have to get out your wallet and count it out. 20, a 10, a 1, a 5, rather than swipe. Pay cash. Start paying cash whenever possible. Did you know, statistics show, and I try to keep this in mind as I use a credit card, statistics show that you will spend 34% more when you use a credit card. Your expenditures are typically 34% more because it's just easier when you're putting it on plastic than when you're paying cash. So people are spending billions of dollars to get you to stay in this mode, to keep going down this path. How do you resist it? How do you spell relief? You spell it B-U-D-G-E-T. Say it with me. B-U-D-G-E-T. You got to have a budget. Plan your spend. See, a budget is nothing more, and some of you just, budget. A budget is nothing more than telling my money where I want it to go instead of wondering where it went. Telling my money where I want it to go instead of wondering where it went. First two steps that Solomon gives us, and we'll look at three more next week. Keep good records. Plan your spending. So if you're here and you're in a mess between this week and next week, one of the things that you could do is start keeping records. Gather your stuff together and figure out, go on a fact-finding mission and find out, what do I own? What do I owe? What do I earn? Where does it go? Start working on that. As we close, I want to share another testimony from a couple in our church. And this is a couple who's made drastic changes in their lifestyle. A downshift. Drastic changes in their lifestyle so that she could stay at home with the kids and support her husband as he was focusing on getting a new business started. Because the year leading up to this decision they made to make some changes, she was the one with the big income. She was the one that was the primary breadwinner. She was working a demanding, high-paying job that required her to travel all week. And her husband was staying at home with their two young children. He was a stay-at-home dad. But her income allowed them to have the big house and most of all the stuff that so many Americans are chasing after. But God spoke to them and led them to make some radical changes that included selling the house, scaling down, and downshifting. Here's what she says. I wrote her and asked if I could have permission to share her story that she sent to me in an email a few months ago. She says, "Dear Brad, we cannot thank you enough for being bold in the way you teach the gospel and for challenging us to submit to the plans of God that he has for us and to be peculiar people. We would be happy for you to share what we've been learning through all of our recent changes, but we want to be clear that this has not been easy and that we certainly have failed to always trust God. Remember I said it's going to take time, it's going to include what? Pain, and there'll be a downshift. We certainly have failed to always trust God, and Satan still tries to get us off track. It all started with a message that you did one Sunday that impacted us both. It was when you spoke about knowledge and the fact that God is more pleased with us having a little knowledge and applying it to our lives than having lots of knowledge and doing nothing with it. From that sermon, we both knew that we were capable of applying more of what we knew to our lives, but little did we know what a big impact it would make. Since our decision to do so, our lives feel as if they've been turned upside down. But in the midst of everything that's happened and is going on, there is peace, one that passes all understanding. Our friends and neighbors look at us and say, 'How are you doing it? How are you making it through? Nothing in your life makes sense right now. And shouldn't you wait to quit your big, high-paying job until you see how much money your husband's new business is going to make so you don't have to leave the beautiful house?' The answer we give them is that we're making it because we've surrendered to God and we're constantly asking him where he wants us and what we can do to live out his will for us. It doesn't make it easy, but we keep asking God for clear direction, and we found in the past few weeks that sometimes that clear direction can feel like a punch in the stomach. But we can get back up and tolerate it because we have hope in a God who loves us and a Savior who sits on his throne reigning. It's amazing that we can be okay with the fact that we just had to take a $17,000 loss in the sale of our home. $17,000 less than what we paid for it is what we got. But we understand now that it really never was ours anyway. So why get caught up in the details this world calls important? Another turning point in this financial journey was when we lost my nephew in August in an accident at the age of 23. It has been extremely painful to watch our family stand beside the casket of a loved one and say goodbye. And God used that night to push me over the edge. I experienced something that night at the visitation in the funeral home that I know was of God. As I stood there looking at my 23-year-old nephew in the casket and thinking about how many fun memories I had with him as he grew up, I realized like never before that you take nothing out of this life except for the time that was invested in you. I then thought about how that time invested in our children must be focused on Christ and the cross more than any other thing this world has to offer. But we live in a world where material things consume us, yet all of those things were left behind, and none of them made any sort of impact on where my nephew would spend eternity. As a full-time working mother with two young children, that caused a pit in my stomach I've not been able to get rid of. Please don't hear me saying that working moms can't provide for their children what they need from a spiritual perspective. But I had to ask myself, is Satan using my career to keep my focus from what is most important? In my case, when I was honest with myself, that was what had been taking place. And I didn't realize it until I came face to face with the death of such a beloved nephew. And I thought about what comes after this life. Our long-term goals now are not to get back in a large home in an upscale neighborhood, but to stay where God is leading us now so we can provide opportunities to many other people. In fact, the lower our own expenses are, the more we can do for other people. What a radical way of thinking. Oh, if more Christians would start to think and live that way. The lower we keep our expenses, the more we will be able to help other people. And we feel that this is a great way to witness what Christ has already done for us. We are confident that God has a plan for us and that by submitting to Him, we'll find ourselves exactly where He wants us. Praise God. Yes, praise God. And that can be you this morning. Where you are right now financially is the sum total of the decisions that you've made to this point. What is God saying to you in these messages? Do you need to change? Is there anything that needs to change? If so, start keeping good records. Start making a plan. Reach out for help if you need it and say, help me. Help me to sort this out. Help me to get a budget. Help me. And then let me tell you, in the midst of the process of changing and getting help, start giving right off the top. Start giving right off the top and find out what God can do with the less. You'll be amazed at what God can do with the less. And let me say this. If you're sitting here with great income and you have not been in the habit of giving, it's not an excuse. It's sad to me. Someone came to me this week and said, well, I was talking to somebody and they said, well, that's easy for you to say and for Pastor Brad to say about people whose income is little. Our income is great. So we think it's reasonable to say there's no way we should give 10%. That would be so much more than you giving 10% of your income. Oh, shut up. When I gave 10% of $11,500, who is sacrificing more? To give 10% of $11,500, if you're making $100,000 or more, to sit there and say to your wife, and she said, and that sounded reasonable to me. Well, I bet it did. That we're just going to give 2 or 3% because we make so much. Oh, so the more you make, the more God blesses you and allows to come your way, the less you're going to give. And you're going to say to God, because good grief, God, 10% of that would be doggone. That'd be a lot. You don't expect me to give that. Folks, He said 10%. He didn't say, once your income's great, I understand, that would really hurt. Well, see, it hurts when you've never done it. When you give 10% of 11,500, and then I made 20 3 years later, and then I made 27, and then I made 32, and then I came here and got 42. And on it goes, and I've given 10, and I've increased the 10. As I've made more, we kept our lifestyle the same, and as my income has increased, we've increased beyond the 10. Having a good income is not a reason to say, so we'll give less, because that would be so much to give 10%. What's God asking you to do? And I press you on this because I want you to begin to experience and see the blessing of God. I want you to get in on what God is doing. I want you to not stand before him and wish you had sent more of it on ahead. I want you to have the joy of seeing people from tribes that are there because you gave to Wycliffe Bible Translators. And they got the Bible in their own language. And there they are with palm branches. And you look over and say, praise God, I had something to do with that. That you'll be a part of some of this instead of standing there thinking, I am here, yet so as by fire. I'm here, I'm saved, but wow, my life and my resources did not matter much at all in the greater scheme. And you look down at the little speck called earth and you think, whew, there's that house, there's those cars, there's that stuff that I lived for. God, I wish someone had told me, hello, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, it's not too late to change. 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 Let's pray together. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for its truthfulness. Thank you for its wisdom. And thank you that it is radical, but it's from you. God, I pray that you by your Spirit would work in our hearts and help every one of us to do whatever it is you're telling us to do. That we'd listen. Not what Brad Bigney says, but we'd listen to you. What are you saying by your grace, by your Spirit, from your word? Oh, Lord, raise up a generation all across our church family that lives radically different with their money. Radically different with their money because we're so kingdom-minded. We're so excited about what you're doing. We want to get in on what you're doing. Lord, use us for the furtherance of your kingdom, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.